On taking back the birth, he revived the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O son of Kuru. Please repeat. On taking such a birth.
On taking such a birth.
He revives the divine consciousness of his previous life. And he again tries to make further progress.
And then he again tries to make further progress.
In order to achieve complete success, O son of Kuru.
In order to achieve complete success, O son of Kuru.
Okay, so if we can all mute at this time.
Peppered by his divine grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. King Bharat, who took his third birth in the family of a good Brahmana, is an example of a good birth for the revival of previous transcendental consciousness. King Bharat was the emperor of the world, and since his time, this planet has been known among the demigods as Bharat Vasha. Formerly, it was known as Ilavrita Vasha. The emperor, at an early age, retired for spiritual perfection, but failed to achieve success. In his next life, he took birth in the family of a good Brahmana and was known as Jada Bharat because he always remained secluded and did not talk to anyone. And later on, he was discovered as the greatest transcendentalist by King Rahugana. From his life, it is understood that transcendental endeavors or the practice of yoga never go in vain. By the grace of the Lord, the transcendentalist gets repeated opportunities for complete perfection in Krishna consciousness. Om Gyan Chimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tashmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swaya Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubaya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Tatra tam buddhi samyogam labhate porva dehikam yatate cha tato buya samsido kurunandana. On taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success. O son of Kuru. So, in this chapter, as we have seen, Krishna is describing the Ashtanga Yoga process, in particular Dhyana Yoga, which is the advanced stage of meditation or concentration on the form of the Lord. And Arjuna has, heard Krishna's description of this process, and he's not very sure that it's very, very practical. And so he has some doubts that one could actually achieve success in following this process. So he expresses his doubt to Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna is trying to allay his fears, any fears that he may have about the process. So in particular, Arjuna wants to know the destination of somebody who starts this process and does not finish because of worldly mindedness or any problems along the way. Somebody who quits early from the process without attaining perfection. And first of all, Krishna assured him that somebody who does good can never be overcome by evil. So anybody who is on this path, Arjuna should understand that, you know, it is auspicious and he can never be overcome by evil. And Krishna basically splits these transcendentalists into two categories. One of them would have practiced after a short period. And if he's unsuccessful after such a period, he would go to the planets of the pious living entities, and after a long period of enjoyment, they would come back into this world, and would take birth in a family of Brahmana, Vaishnavas, or an aristocratic family. So an auspicious family after enjoying, you know, because he still has propensities to enjoy, so he would enjoy and then come and take his birth and then continue his Krishna consciousness. And the other type of person would be someone else who had practiced after a long period of yoga practice and fell along the way. And Krishna said such a person would take birth in a family of learned transcendentalists. And he explained that this type of birth is quite rare. And in that family, the person would straight away take up his Krishna consciousness because he'd be given the facility, the opportunity to start his Krishna consciousness immediately as a child. And importantly, he would be given opportunities for training. He would be trained along the way very early in life. And so Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, we saw that they were good examples of such a birth. So the important thing here is that Krishna is assuring Arjuna that anybody who takes to this path of Krishna consciousness or yoga practice will at least get a human body. That is a certainty Krishna is demonstrating here. You at least get a human body, and not just a human body, but a very auspicious birth. So in this particular text, Krishna is referring to these types of persons, right? These two types of persons, this text is actually referring to them. It says, on taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success. And the purpose, Sri Prabhupada says that King Bharat, who took his third birth in the family of a good Brahmana, is an example of good birth for the revival of previous transcendental consciousness. So King Bharat is an example of such a person who practiced before and fell somewhere along the line, and he has taken birth in a good family to continue his Krishna consciousness. So King Bharat, of course, was a great king. He was a great king, was the eldest son of Lord Rishabhdev, who had 100 sons. And they were all very qualified sons. Nine other sons were great Kshatriya rulers as well. Another nine of the sons were the Navayugendras, who instructed Maharaj Nimi on the science of Bhagavad Dham. And the remaining 81 brothers were all very qualified brahmanas who performed various types of sacrifices in Karmakanda. And so when Lord Rishabhadev left, Bharat took over as instructed by his father, and he ruled very, very nicely his kingdom. He ruled for a long time. Actually, he was meant to enjoy material opulences for 10 million years. You know? But he gave it all up quite early, at a young age, as we saw here. He gave it up at an early age and left to perform penances in the forest to perfect his life. And whilst he was in the forest, he went to a place. He went to a place called Pulahashram, and there was a river there called the Gandaki River, where he used to get water. And in the forest, he would get twigs and fruits and offer these things to the Lord. And he lived like that, a very austere life. And he practiced his Krishna consciousness and was increasing in his devotion for the Lord. He was really making tremendous advancement. His heart was filled with love for Krishna, and his mind was always fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. And in this way, he continued to make great spiritual advancement. One day he was sitting by the river after his evening program, and he was about to chant his mantras, and he saw a thirsty deer, female deer, doe, come to drink some water. And as she was drinking, there was a roar of a lion in the background, and she got frightened. She was pregnant, actually. She got frightened, and she attempted to run away, and when she was running away, her fawn, the baby deer, fell in the water, and she went to a cave and died. And Maharaj Bharat was sitting there, and he could see the baby deer in the water moving along. The water was taking the deer along. So instinctively, being such a kind-hearted soul who could see Krishna everywhere, he immediately got up and rescued the deer from the water, from the river. And he started to take care of the deer. And he took such fantastic care of the deer, such amazing care of the deer. And he was getting very, very attached to this deer, as we all know. Tremendously attached. He took the deer everywhere. He would sleep with the deer and was always feeding the deer, always thinking about the deer. And somehow or other, his meditation on Krishna began to be interrupted, and it just got worse and worse, because his attention was getting so much on the deer, on the baby deer, and he would take it everywhere and was always concerned for its welfare, because he was concerned about the wild animals that were in the area. And so Maharaj Bharat continued like this, and practically he gave up most of his spiritual performances, his spiritual rituals, because of the deer. And one day, he was about to do his evening program. He couldn't see the deer anywhere, so he went to look for the deer. He went out to look for the deer because he just couldn't start his worship without knowing that the deer was safe. He went to look for the deer, and he followed the footprints, and he went looking for the deer. And it was getting dark. He couldn't find the deer, and eventually, it was dark. So he fell down. He fell off a cliff. And as he was about to leave his body, he saw the deer there, standing by him affectionately. And he, of course, he thought of the deer. And in that consciousness, he left the body. Yam yam bhapi smaran bhava trajate ante kalivaram tam tam evaite kaunteya sadata bhava bhavita. In whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he attains without fail. So without fail, he attained the body of a deer. But it was a very special birth, actually. Even though it was in the body of a deer, it was a special birth because he could remember his past life. And immediately he was regretting how foolish he had been to become attached and to have fallen from his position. After all, he was a great king and he gave up everything, and to have actually had the opportunity to advance in his Krishna consciousness, to be drawn by this destruction, he found that very regrettable indeed, and he was very sorry that he had wasted the opportunity that he had. And in that consciousness, even though in the body of a deer, he was very renounced, and he was born somewhere else, but went to the area where he had performed his practice before, and he stayed by the hermitages of the sages there. He lived the life of a deer until he left the life of a deer, and then he took birth in a big family of brahmanas. And this is exactly what happened here. In this verse, this is what we're talking about. He's taken his birth again, and immediately in a family of brahmanas, a very qualified brahmana, and immediately he was given the opportunity to revive his Krishna consciousness, because his father was very keen that his son should be a brahmana, should learn everything about brahminical culture right from the beginning. And Bharat Maharaj knew exactly of his past and the failed opportunity that he had, and he was very determined in this life that this would not happen to him again, and he was very determined to make a success of his Krishna consciousness. And so even his father's attempting to teach him Brahminical culture, he found that he felt that that would be a distraction. So he pretended to be dumb and deaf and blind and very stupid. But he was none of these things. And his father used to patiently try to teach him all sorts of things. And he pretended he was silly and couldn't understand all this. Like, his father told him that he should wash his hands after passing stool, but Bharat Maharaj would do exactly the opposite intentionally. He'd wash his hands before passing stool and all sorts of things like that. And in this way, he wanted actually to be left alone. And he didn't talk to anyone. And that is why he was actually called Jada Bharat, because Jada means dead, you know, dead like dead matter, Jadam. And he continued like that. And his father unsuccessfully tried to do this. And so when his father died, his brothers, he had other brothers, and they started to treat him very badly. They sent him to the farm to go and work. And he was very strong, and he used to work on the farm, and they give him, you know, just all the broken rice eaten by worms and things like that. Very, very bad food. But Bharat Maharaj was completely fixed on his meditation on Krishna. He knew he was not the body, and because his meditation was so fixed, he was not disturbed by any of these injustices from his brothers. And one day he was on the farm like that, looking over the crops to make sure no animals would come and eat the crops. And there were some dacoits who were in the area who were looking for somebody to take to offer and sacrifice, because their leader wanted to make a sacrifice of a dull person. And so they saw him. Actually, they had got somebody before, and the person escaped, right? So they went looking for that person. But in the process, they saw Chattabharat, and they thought that he would be quite a good person to sacrifice. So they saw him, and they bound him up, and they took him away to their leader, and they took him to the temple of this goddess, Kali, to make the sacrifice. And Bharat Maharaj was completely, you know, he no protest, nothing. He just accepted. He just, no struggle. He just went with them, and they went to the temple, prepared him, bathed him very nicely, and gave him very nice food to eat. He just accepted all that. And when it was time to make the sacrifice, we were going to sacrifice his blood to the goddess Kali. And just when they were about to cut off his head, the goddess showed out to cut off his head, and the goddess came out. The goddess, knowing that he was a great devotee, came out of the altar and came and killed them. Like that, because she knew that Bharat was a very dear devotee of Lord Krishna, and she protected him immediately. But all throughout this experience, Bharat Maharaj was completely resigned to his fate. He just accepted anything, and he didn't even find it anything wonderful that the goddess had saved him or anything. He just accepted it, and he left. And he continued like that. And one day he was there, and there was a king. This Rahugana, we heard about, he was riding, and his people needed one more person to carry the palanquin. They were going a long way, and they needed to cross a river. And to cross the river, they need another hand to carry the palanquin. And so they saw Jada Bharat, and they conscripted him for that task. And he came to, you know, to carry the palanquin. But because of his great concern for other living entities, you know, who is a symptom of a great devotee. You know, he treats everyone equally. He treats all the creatures equally, and he's not envious of any creature. So he was very concerned about the welfare of the ants. So every now and again, he would stop, and the palanquin would jolt like that. And it was uncomfortable for the king. So the king was getting angry, and his other palanquin bearers told him that it's the fault of this person we have just taken off the street. He's the one who is causing the thing to giving you this uncomfortable ride. And the king told him off, Jada Bharat, but he still continued to behave like that. He was still thinking about these ants, trying to walk in such a way that he wouldn't kill any ants. And the king insulted him, and the king got very angry. Now he says, look, I am your master, you know. If you carry on like this, I'm going to punish you like that. And at this stage, before that, Jada Bharat hadn't said anything, but at this stage he started to speak to the king. He started to speak back, and he told him that, look, You are calling me stout and useless and like an old person, but you're just referring to my body. You know, I am none of these things. You know, I am none of these things. These things are all pertaining to my body. So you are right in the sense that I am. It's not me actually you're talking about. It's my body, right? I am not lazy. It's my body who is all these things. And he also told the king that in this life you may be a king and I may be serving you, but in another life all these things could turn around. So he gave the king so many valuable instructions, and the king could immediately see that he was a great soul. And the king got out of the palanquin and came to pay his respects to him and asked him to instruct him on the science of life. Actually, King Rahugana himself was a very learned king. He was very aware of the science of Krishna consciousness. He had heard a lot, and he was actually going to, he was on a pilgrimage actually to Lord Kapila's ashram. So he had a lot of interest in spiritual life. But the problem he had was that he had very few realizations. And so Narad Maharaj's instructions actually, this incident actually gave him lots of realization, which was what was lacking. As prior to that, it was just full of knowledge. So towards the end of the purport, the Prabhupada says that from his life, it is understood that transcendental endeavors or the practice of yoga never go in vain, right? From Bharat Maharaj's life, we understand that the transcendental endeavors or the practice of yoga never go in vain. By the grace of the Lord, the transcendentalist gets repeated opportunities for complete perfection in Krishna consciousness. So transcendental endeavors or the practice of yoga never go in vain. In Bhagavad Gita 2.40, Krishna says something very similar. He says that in this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, right? He's referring to Bhakti Yoga. In this endeavor, there's no loss or diminution, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. The most dangerous type of fear, which is taking birth in a lower species. So spiritual activities are eternal, right? They are eternal activities. Spiritual activities, any spiritual activity is an eternal activity because it's related to the eternal spirit soul and not the body. Material activities which relate to the body are temporary activities. And when the body is finished, these material activities or their benefits, any benefits we may accrue from performing material activities also finish when the body is finished, right? And spiritual activities are actually, they have eternal benefit because they are actually relating to the eternal soul. The soul is eternal, and any activities for the benefit of the soul are eternal activities. So Krishna says that we are sanatana, right? Mam evam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. We are his eternal, fragmented part and parcels. Krishna is eternal, and so we are eternal. And we have eternal activities. We have eternal activities, and our real position is to be with Krishna, is to have in our eternal relationship with Krishna in his eternal abode. So this is all eternal. Spiritual life is all eternal. And Sanatana Dharma, which is the practice of these processes that will allow us to be reinstated in our eternal position. Right. So this is what spiritual life is about. All that we're doing in spiritual life are for the reaching our eternal position. Whereas material activities end with the body. They are non-sanatana. So Krishna talks about, you know, less intelligent people being very much attracted to material gains. Like he talks about less intelligent people wanting benefits from the demigods, right? Alpha Medasam, they are less intelligent and they want benefits which are temporary from the demigod. So spiritual life means that they're looking for something permanent. And in that purport in 240, Srila Prabhupada says that spiritual life is such that if you do 1% in your life and you leave it at 1%, that is your success. In your next life, you carry on from the point of 2%. That is what happens. So you carry on from 2% and in your next life. Whereas in material life, you have to, in material life, if you don't finish something, that's where you end up. If you don't finish something, if you start something and you don't finish, you just end up in that position, right? Everything is lost after and from wherever you leave off, if you don't complete it, you don't get anything. And in this way, spiritual activities, you know, have got eternal benefit. And actually, Jesus Christ in his teachings was very strong on this point. You know, he was very strong on this point. He said that you should lay not for yourself treasures in this earth, where they can be stolen, or dust or moths can corrupt, or rust or moths can corrupt them. But rather, you should lay up for yourself treasures in heaven. For where your treasure is, there your heart is also. And where your treasure is, there your heart is. And he also said that what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world but suffers the loss of his own soul? So this is very standard in spiritual life, that we have to perform spiritual activities which will benefit us eternally. And we will never lose anything, because we will have the opportunity, like Krishna is showing us, we will have the opportunity to continue in our next birth and take up from exactly where we have left off. We will revive the divine consciousness from the previous life. So it's a great fortune, actually, to take birth, you know, somehow or other, and get Krishna consciousness, or to have it. And it's just a great fortune. And this is the whole of Krishna's plan in Bhagavad Gita. The whole of Krishna's plan is to give us knowledge of the soul. You know, he wants us to get perfection by becoming perfectly in knowledge of the soul, and then we can actually perfect our lives. And in Vedic scriptures, we actually learn that somebody who is chanting the holy name, he must have performed, right? He must have performed all the Vedic rituals. He must have visited the holy places. He must have bathed in all the holy rivers. And he must have studied the Vedas. He must have done all these things. I mean, this is in the Vedic scriptures. Actually, in the next purport, Srila Prabhupada elaborates on this. He refers to a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Devahuti says this to her son, Lord Kapila. And I mean, this is a very logical statement, because we can see logically that the Vedas say, Krishna says that he says, Vedas chasave aham eva vidyo. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. This is the purpose of the Vedas. This is the goal of the Vedas, right? To know Krishna. And somebody who is chanting Hare Krishna knows Krishna. So therefore, we can understand that one who knows Krishna must have performed these rituals, must have performed all these rituals in Vedic study. But for many, of course, and for many devotees, it is a little difficult to fully, to sort of somehow or other, to fully accept this. It just seems, you know, could I have done all these things? Actually, for a start, we don't know if we are devotees. I mean, we don't know if we are devotees. I don't know if I am a devotee. But in any case, if we are chanting Hare Krishna, and if you're chanting properly and sincerely, then we are told that we must have performed all these things. It's a little difficult to understand this or to accept this. And somehow it seems this bhakti yoga process seems a bit too easy. Seems a bit too easy to accept that we have studied Vedanta and done all these things, and this is the next stage. And also, you know, in that verse that I just mentioned there about Devahuti, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that the smarter brahmanas, some of them do not accept this position, that or this idea that people chanting Hare Krishna must have performed all the Vedic rituals and must have studied all the shastras and all that. They don't really accept that. They say it's the opposite. Rather, people are chanting Hare Krishna to purify themselves so that they are qualified to follow the Vedic rituals. This is the argument. They're saying it's not like that. It's the other way around. But Srila Prabhupada is emphatic. He says that no, the devotees, the purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna, and people who are chanting Hare Krishna know Krishna, and they have done all these rituals, and they don't need them. You just have to see the purity of the eight souls in Krishna consciousness, that they are not performing these rituals. They are fixed up in their positions as servitors of Krishna, and they know Krishna, and they're chanting his names and all that. So devotees are very fortunate. somehow, somewhere in their lives, in our previous lives or somewhere or other, we must have had the seed of bhakti sown in our hearts, you know. And Brahmananda, Brahmite, Kone, Bhagavan Jiva, Guru Krishna, Prasad, Paya, Bhakti, Lata, Bhisha. That the living entities are wandering through all the various planets, and somehow or other, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, they get the seed of bhakti sown in their hearts. And by the process of hearing and chanting, watering, the seed develops. So we have come to Krishna consciousness at various stages of this ripening of the seed. You know, we have got some seed, and we have come in at various stages. Some people come in, like we heard, some people come in very advanced, like we've just seen there. Some people are coming after long periods of practice where they have done this and many times before, and they're continuing. And others, not so ripe. Others have just had some contact with Krishna consciousness somewhere along the way. So this doubting is there sometimes, like I said earlier. So one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, about this. He had this doubt that he could have done all these things. And Srila Prabhupada was sensing that he was, you know, doubting that he could have done, you know, so much before coming to Krishna consciousness in terms of performing Vedic rituals. And Srila Prabhupada says that, he said, you came to Krishna consciousness by my mercy. By my mercy, you came to Krishna consciousness. But whatever it is, right, some Sukriti is needed. You know, it could be Agyata Sukriti, it could be something we have done and not known about, or it could be after some practice, like we have seen, some practice of Krishna consciousness, we have come into this process. And when Srila Prabhupada started his Krishna consciousness mission in America, and when he started it, they were mostly Jewish people of Jewish backgrounds and Catholics who were responding to his call, you know, his mission in Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada said that the Jewish boys were coming because they were intelligent, you know, they were intelligent, and the Catholics were coming because they were pious, you know, because they were pious. So these were the classes of people who were coming. So we may know all this, but doubts may still persist. As you see, Arjuna has his doubts, and doubting is a common thing in Krishna consciousness. It's not unusual that we doubt our calling, you know. But if you're falling, you know, like we're chanting and we're falling for eggs and all that, do we really feel 100% certain that we're going back to Godhead? That is a doubt sometimes, isn't it? We may not even consider ourselves, you know, unsuccessful or fallen or anything. But despite many assurances from Krishna, despite many assurances from Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, you know, and in other scriptures, and despite the assurance of the spiritual master that we chant and all that, and we will go back to Godhead, we may still have our doubts, you know. And Krishna says, he says, man mana bhava mad bhakta. He says, you should always think of me, you know. You should become my devotee, offer your worship me, and pay your homage to me. And he says, in that way you will come to me. He says, I promise you this, right? I promise you that if you do that, you will come to me. Krishna says, sabha dhamma parityaja. Mami kamsa anam vraja aham tu am sabe papa bio moksha yishasmi masucha. He says, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender unto me, and I'll release you from all, I'll protect you from all sinful reactions. He's assuring us, right? And he says that whoever knows janma karma chame nidam, whoever knows the transcendental nature of his birth and activities, does not take birth again in this material world, but attains his nature. And the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, says that, we heard from Mother Kandita the other day, Srila Prabhupada promises that if you follow the four eggs and you chant Hare Krishna, you will go back to Godhead, right? You will go back to Godhead. And so many assurances everywhere. Srila Rupa Goswami, in the Nectar of Instruction, he says you follow these six principles, right? Utsaha, nischarya, dharyati, shudha, enthusiasm, confidence, patience, and rejecting the association of non-devotees, following the principles, and following the footsteps of the previous acharyas. He says you follow these six things. These six things undoubtedly, he says, undoubtedly, you will have success in pure devotional service. These things will give you undoubted success in pure devotional service. So they keep on giving us all these assurances. We're getting all these assurances from the devotees, from the spiritual master. And we continue like that. So if we're not really completely confident that, completely confident in our spiritual consciousness, there's only one main reason why we may not be fully confident. And that main reason, apart from humility and all that, but one main reason why we may not be fully confident is because we have not really fully surrendered. Because this is what is required in bhakti. Bhakti is very easy, but it requires surrender. And it requires full surrender. To be successful in bhakti means that we have to fully surrender. We have to fully surrender the false ego. So we see from Jada Bharat's, from Maharaj Bharat's experience, so when he was Jada Bharat and he was captured by these dacoits, you know, he completely accepted the situation. First of all, he was a very detached person, full of detachment. And when he was captured, he did not protest or anything. He just went along with it. He understood that everything was, Krishna was in full control, and there was no reason for him to fear because he was fully surrendered, fully surrendered. And when he was about to be beheaded also, he was not screaming and shouting and fighting and protesting, right? He just went along with it because he accepted it as Krishna's will for him. I mean, he was fully realized, and he knew he was in the body anyway, but he was completely surrendered to the will of Lord Krishna. And no questions, fully accepting everything that was happening to him as Krishna's mercy. And this is the level of surrender that is required. Full surrender, giving everything to Krishna. Like Lord Ramachandra says that whoever says to me from this day that I am yours, you know, if you say I am yours, and you really sincerely say I am yours, and you're fully, I will take that person. But we have to give that surrender fully. And this is where we may be struggling to really surrender that false ego. And that is why we may have doubts. It's because of surrender. So how do we really get there? And the things, the stumbling blocks really along the way are really is raga dvesham and katatam bhoktatvam. Is attachment and aversion. Attachment and aversion. We have so many attachments and we are averse to so many things. And then this consciousness of I am the doer and I am the enjoyer is there. It's very strong, and we are the whole of our sadhana is to bring us to this position of surrender, is to let us overcome these things, these blocks, these shackles that take us down. This attachment and aversion, and I am the doer and I am the enjoyer. These are the false conceptions that we are battling with. But ultimately, Krishna asked Arjuna to declare it boldly that his devotee will never perish, right? He asked him somewhere, he said, declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish. And as a devotee, Krishna assures us that no matter what it is, if it is lack of surrender or is anything, the devotee will never perish. Krishna assures us that we will make success. He guarantees success in the end. You know, Krishna started this good work in us of Krishna consciousness. He has given us this human body, which is a very rare boon. It's a fantastic boon. There are 8.4 million species of life. To get the birth of a human being is actually a fantastic and amazing boon, right? So Krishna has done that for us. And then somehow that Krishna has given us, by his great mercy, Krishna consciousness somewhere along the way, which we are actually enjoying and practicing and trying to make some success of it. We have understood that there is nothing in life but Krishna consciousness. And if in that understanding, if we continue like that, Krishna has given us all these things. Why would he not finish the good work that he started? You know, he's our eternal loving father, and he wants us to come back to him. So there's plenty of hope for us in Krishna consciousness, and we have to be always grateful for the mercy that we are getting, and also be confident, you know, at least be confident that Krishna is taking care of things and will finish this work that he has started. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So I'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Just one second. Let me unmute. Okay, there we go. So if there's any questions or comments.
Yes.
Thank you for a very nice class and the stories. I like all the stories you always tell. Do you memorize those things? You seem like you remember all the details. It's great.
No, actually, I have a very poor head for stories, unfortunately. I also like stories very much, but I have a very poor head for stories. I'm always thinking to myself I should make some effort to try to consciously somehow learn these stories, but I'm not doing that at the moment. I had to read up on the story, actually, before I told it in this way. So I like stories a lot, and maybe one day, by the mercy, we'll get there, telling stories very nicely. Hare Krishna.
Hare
Thank
Krishna.
You.
I have a challenge.
Haribo.
Someone may think that with the story of Jad Bharat that he should have put up a fight, because in actuality this body is not ours, so therefore we should protect it. So then when he was approached by the dacoits, or I think that's how it referred to, then he should have put up a fight.
Yeah. He knew he wasn't, he knew he was not the body. I mean, the body is only a vehicle to finish any sort of karma or propensities that we have, right? One day it's going to drop away. So his realization was very high, and he was completely fixed up in spiritual consciousness, and he was very advanced. And in that way, he didn't actually see that the body was so important, because he actually knew that he had a relationship with Krishna, and he was fixed in that relationship, and that is where his meditation was. And so naturally, he didn't feel inclined to do anything with the body. It was just an inclination that he had. But of course, the body is given by Krishna, and it is natural that we would defend ourselves, right? If somebody attacks us, at least we put our hands up to defend ourselves. But somehow or other, this was completely missing in him, because he had no desires. He had no desire whatsoever to be in this world. Well, he had no material desires to fulfill. He was just living and waiting for the body to drop. And so, therefore, this was why instinctively he didn't feel he needed to defend himself. He could see everything as Krishna's doing. And it's just the way it was. So I would think that if we feel that we must protect the body, that is also good, because that is our realization at that time, that perhaps we want to, if it's because we want to use the body for Krishna, you know, really, if we think we have a mission in Krishna consciousness and we really want to use that body, that is our realization. We want to use that body in Krishna's service. That is our true realization, and not just want to protect the body because we are attached to the body. Then it's also good if we protect the body for that purpose. But if we are protecting the body because I'm attached to the body and I want to continue my bodily existence, you know, I'm scared to leave my body, then it's not so good. So I think that's how I would look at it.
Yeah, that sounds good. There was one instance I think I mentioned before when devotees were telling Srila Prabhupada about that plane crash, the soccer club that got caught in the mountains of Argentina, and then they ended up having to eat the other passengers that had died. And then Prabhupada said, yes, you know, you have to maintain yourself, so even in extraordinary circumstances that can be done. However, according to realization, like you were saying, if there's a great devotee, you see in the character of not only Jodh Bharat, but Vlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj also, or Sudama Brahman, you know, they didn't care for their bodies. They just was completely surrendered to Krishna. So I think it's a matter of our advancement, our realization, you know, what situations Krishna puts us in. Instead of just being fatalistic, you know, it would depend on the circumstances and the depth of our realization.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hare Krishna.
Oh, yeah, Maharaj Pariksit also. That's another good example. Okay, anything else?
What about love of Krishna being a qualification for going back to Godhead?
That is the ultimate qualification. That is the ultimate purpose of spiritual life, to love Krishna. You know, so this is what bhakti means.
And to be finished here.
And to be, sorry?
And to be completely finished with this plane of activity, the material world.
Yes, but there again, also it depends on realization, because to some extent, I mean, the material and spiritual are there according to our understanding. Everything basically is spiritual. So even though this is not our level, right, but the advanced devotee, he doesn't care where he is, whether it's a so-called material world or spiritual world, because his consciousness is completely fixed on Krishna. And he sees nothing but Krishna's energy everywhere and Krishna's presence everywhere. So there's no distinction strictly between material and spiritual for him. So that wanting to get away from this material world is fine to be with Krishna, but also if it's to want to be liberated from this world in that sense, to get liberation from, you know, this world, then it is questionable that it's such a good thing, because what we should be aiming for is to serve Krishna. And service of Krishna can be done anywhere, whether it's in hell or heaven or anywhere. Once that service is, that service attitude is there, the devotee actually doesn't really mind where he is serving. Of course, that is the advanced devotee. For the normal person, I guess we have to have some desire to finish material activities. But the higher understanding is that there is no actually material and spiritual, and it depends on our consciousness and our service attitude. And if we've got that, then any place we can serve happily, because it's to please Krishna. And to know him is to love him, right? And you know him, you know Krishna, you love him, and you want to please him. Love means that you want to please somebody, not to want to exploit. Like we know, Sridhar Maharaj used to like to say that you come off the plane of exploitation to the plane of dedication, right? We have to dedicate our lives, not to exploit. Material world basically means exploitation. And spiritual consciousness means that we are dedicating our activities to the service of Krishna, and his pleasure becomes the central issue. So love is there, very important, bhakti. Is that the sort of thing that we're thinking about?
I agree with you. It's here, there, it's about service, it's about full absorption. But, you know, there was some mention that there's some formula and there's some promise where Prabhupada said, of course, who's doing it? You know, who's chanting, who hasn't failed to chant, you know, in real rounds every single day of their lives and not stumbled subtly or grossly in the four regular principles? Because, you know, there's gross offenses and then there's subtle offenses. You know, sex life extends all the way to profit, adoration, the distinction. You know, if somebody's into name and fame or somebody's into some subtle enhancement, you know, of their ego, they're not pure, correct?
Yes.
And such a person, so you have to become pure, to, you know, pure in heart, pure lover of Krishna, to go back home, back to Godhead.
Yes. Ultimately, that's needed. That's why Sri Prabhupada gives us the assurance, right? But of course, when we talk about chanting, we're talking about different types of chanting. Of course, we know that there are different types of, there's offensive chanting, there's pure chanting, you know, then there's the clearing stage. So, yes, to chant Hare Krishna is there, but what type of chanting are we doing? Is it mechanical chanting? Is it proper chanting? I mean, these questions will always be there. These questions will always be there. And the love that we have for Krishna, how is it pure? Is it motivated? You know, we may be doing so much service, but the purity of that love, how unalloyed it is, anyam bilasa sunyam, how free it is from all sorts of and desires for fruitive results and all that. These things will always be very, make it all very nebulous and very unclear. But ultimately, we have to continue, and there will always be these impurities there, and that is the process. It's a very gradual process, and somebody who may seem very pure may have some very, you know, few things in the heart there that are impure, you know. And that is why the cleaning starts with removing all the big things before the very small, subtle things have to come out as well. And they are very difficult to actually get away. False pride and pratistha, desire for name and fame, all these things will always haunt us, even at the very high levels of spiritual practice. So it continues like that, and we have to take full shelter, actually. And at any stage, we should understand that we are not qualified, you know. That is it. At every stage, we have to understand that we're not qualified. We're really guided by the mercy of Krishna. It's not anything we do. We can only try. The sadhana is only to help us to become surrendered. But ultimately, it's the degree of our surrender, and depending on Krishna. When he sees that, we understand that we are not the doers and we are not doing anything. We cannot please him by our actions like that. But somehow or other, he has to give us the mercy and see us. Now, yeah, this person is trying hard. This person really wants to reach out to me. So sincerely, he's let me reach out to him. And that is when it all happens.
Yes. Nice. Very nice answer.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, thank you very much, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for a very nice class. Hare Bol.
Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Bol.
Oh, don't forget tomorrow's Ekadashi. Yeah, watch out.
Thank you.
Lines up on the pitch.
No popcorn.
Up on you.
Oh, darn.
Okay.
All right, Hare Bol. Hare Bol.
To this Ekadashi, I'm in
Hare Bol.